Lately, I've been using a new product that I really like. It's called Superbeads. It's based on Nobel Prize winning research and the nitric oxide principle. Nitrates are converted to nitric oxide in the body, which is the secret to Superbeads' activity. Call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeads.com. That's 800-738-2198, intelligentbeads.com. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, because this is part two of today's weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. And Layla, let's tell our listeners about an exciting event that's coming up in Manhattan. I know we have listeners across the country and throughout the world, but for those of our listeners, we have quite a few of them, in the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, there is a very exciting event coming up at the Hoffman Center, which is located in Midtown Manhattan.
Yes. We're giving a seminar on the end of overeating and food addiction, how to deal with your cravings. And this is on Wednesday, June 24, at 6:30 p.m. Reservations are a must, so you must call to make your reservation, 212-779-1744. So please call today.
Yeah, indeed. Reserve your place. And for those of you who are, we've had a lot of requests for this, and finally we're implementing this. So a lot of people said, gee, I wish I could get to your seminars, but I live too far away, or I have sworn off Manhattan. I'm, every time I go to New York City, I get freaked out. I might get shot, stabbed, run over by an errant bicyclist, so I stay away. So for those of you who are faint of heart or live too far away, we've created an opportunity for you to watch a video of the proceedings, and that'll be made available after our live seminar on the 24th. So check our website at drhoffman.com for all the information on how you can either be there or view the workshop, which is, I'm very excited about, because we're really going to, you may say, well, okay, cravings, how do you avoid cravings? Well, what is there to that? Well, the latest scientific findings, they literally have exploded in the past few years, mm-hmm. and we have some very, very exciting cutting-edge information that I think that none of you have heard so far. So we want to bring that technology to the fore, because it's technology that you can use in your daily life to turn things around. If you've got issues with food, if you have issues with weight, this is knowledge that you must have, because if you've tried to diet time and time again, failed miserably, ready to give up the ghost on the whole process of restraining yourself from overeating, you need to hear some of these facts, because they're really very, very germane.
Yes.
To the issue of ultimately good health, because it's we're talking weight loss, but also we're talking about good health through diet, and that's going to involve interposing some rules between you and the food environment that surrounds us and seduces us. In fact,
yes, what makes the craving so painful, as a matter of fact, and how to undo all of that. It's time to stop the madness once and for all. So do join us, June 24.
Right. Stop the madness. Get off the diet merry-go-round. All right. So what questions remain for us today?
Okay. We have a question from Aaron. Hello, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. I went to my doctor recently, and he warned me against the long-term use of olive leaf extract because of bacterial resistance. Is this as big a concern as prescription antibiotics?
Well, I think this results from he's seeing it through the framework of conventional medicine, as a conventional doctor would. He was saying, well, first of all, doctors don't know much about vitamins and supplements. He has maybe looked this up and found out that this is a natural antibiotic. Hence, he thinks it's like other antibiotics.
Yeah.
Eventually, the bacteria get smart and learn how to evade it, and then it becomes tougher and tougher to kill the bacteria. So there's a couple of problems with that reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
One is that this, you know, olive leaf, first of all, isn't a powerful antibiotic. And even if he were right, and the bacteria developed a resistance to olive leaf, this wouldn't be much of a problem at all. Because say this person were to wind up in the emergency room with pneumonia, and they would say, "Are you resistant to any antibiotics?" And he would say, "Well, olive leaf. I'm resistant." They say, "Oh my God, you're doomed, because that's the only thing we have here in this hospital."
Oh no!
Now that you no longer respond to olive leaf, forget about it. We're going to just write you off. So yeah, imagine the absurdity of that scenario.
Yeah.
So that's number one. Number two, you have to understand the way these natural agents work. An antibiotic has a laser-like effect on one aspect of bacterial metabolism. Mm-hmm. Some of them break the cell membrane of the bacteria. Some of them inhibit the RNA of the bacteria. Some, you know, they have different ways of attacking the bacteria, but usually a very specific mechanism that can be easily circumvented by the bacteria. The bacteria will learn a new trick so that they have a mutation which renders the antibiotic ineffective. Substances like olive leaf they're usually a melange of chemicals, natural polyphenol chemicals. Mm-hmm. And so what you get is you get sort of a multiplicity of chemicals. They're not pure like antibiotics. So a bacteria would have to learn, 50, 20, 30, 40 tricks to become completely resistant to olive leaf.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's conceivable that there would be maybe some partial resistance.
Yeah.
And frankly, there's some bugs that can't be killed with olive leaf, because olive leaf, really isn't, it's not as powerful as a conventional antibiotic.
Right.
It's pretty potent, but it's not at that order. But if you can take something that's benign and natural, and we have patients taking olive leaf for years and years and years.
Yeah.
For acne, for chronic,
For blood pressure?
For blood pressure, yes.
It's wonderful for blood pressure.
That's the additional benefit.
It can help to lower high blood sugars as well. It has a small effect of that. And it's wonderful during cold and flu season.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the absurdity of that would be like, do you see the people of Sicily and southern Italy and Crete who consume enormous amounts of olive oil? Are they like sickly because they consume so much olive oil that's rich in these polyphenols from olive leaf? No.
Don't think so.
So, I mean, again, I think that the conventional doctors, like he said, he puts it into his framework, which is a narrow framework, and doesn't get it about the whole philosophy underlying natural medicine.
Right, which is more matrix.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Matrix is right. Like a complex web of interactions rather than a laser-like
targeted.
Find a bug, use a drug approach.
Yeah. Missile.
Right. The guided.
Missile.
In fact, the word was coined by one of the early innovators in bacteriology, Dr. Paul Ehrlich, and this is the mid 20th century when they first started having antibiotics. And he called these drugs magic bullets.
Ah.
Magic bullets. Very targeted approach. But the olive leaf is more like, it's more like a, by analogy, it's more like a birdshot rather than a magic bullet.
Uh-huh.
It's like a dispersed kind of beam that's diffuse rather than highly laser-like targeted.
Yeah. Aaron, keep taking your olive leaf.
Yeah, no danger.
Okay. Hello, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. I know it's important to store supplements in a cool, dry, dark place, like in the cupboard. However, I was told not to refrigerate them, which I started doing several months ago, as this will expose the nutrients to moisture, lessen the shelf life, and render them less effective. Is that true?
Well, I don't see how they're going to be exposed to moisture if you keep the bottles closed.
Exactly. I keep my supplements in the fridge in the summer.
In the fridge, but when you close.
They're closed.
I don't want to go over ground that I've already gone over, but I recently had my kitchen remodeled, and they said, "Oh, we have room for under the counter. Are you a wine drinker, Dr. Hoffman? Are you a wine fancier? We can give you a little wine cooler, you know, like
a little wine fridge."
Wine fridge. And I said, "No, if I get a bottle of wine once in a while, I'll just put it in the regular refrigerator."
Yeah.
But I said, "Well, put one in, but without the wine shelves, because I now keep all my vitamins in my regular refrigerator, so my regular refrigerator is like crammed with vitamins.
Uh-huh.
I just want to take that out and separate out my vitamins in this little bar refrigerator." So I got all my vitamins.
So you've got
in
your
there.
Vitamin bar.
Yeah, right. So there's, and I don't, there are certain vitamins where it doesn't really matter, but I just default to putting it in there, and that should be fine.
Yeah. No, I keep them in the fridge, in the door of the fridge, in the warmer months because the apartment gets warm.
Right.
I'm not a huge fan of air conditioning. It's got to get quite uncomfortable before I turn it on, but I keep it in the fridge for that reason.
Yeah, because just heat degrades things faster, even
it
if
does.
They're in the bottle.
And especially B vitamins, because they will be destroyed by heat. So you want to be sure that it's a cool place. Thank you for your question. Okay. Oh, we have a nice note from Ida. I always enjoy reading your newsletter, and this last one about the five health battles was well done, Dr. Hoffman.
Okay.
Keep up your advocacy in the alternative health field. You and many more like you are starting to make inroads in our healthcare dilemma. Indeed.
Well, that's nice to hear. Not even a question.
Just, yeah.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Christine. Hi, I've been taking CoQ10 for a number of years. I'm not on a statin. I take no pharmaceuticals. I'm taking CoQ10 because of a family history of cardiovascular disease and to help with oxidative stress. A month ago, I ran out of it, and while I was out of it, I started to notice muscle soreness and stiffness. I didn't do anything differently except run out of CoQ10. No change in diet. Have you ever heard of a rebound effect?
So, this is interesting, and I guess...
And she restarted it, and the muscle soreness
went away. Right,
she's 61.
Right, so this would be... I think it's interesting, and I'm open to that possibility. A rebound means that when you take something and you don't take it, then the symptoms come back redoubled.
Yeah.
So it is also possible, though, that since she began taking CoQ10, that she had some age-related changes in her muscle metabolism, where when she stops, she now notices them, because she's, well, it wasn't like that 5 years ago when I started taking it, but, you go from 55 to 61. And
Christine says she's physically active, and it could be that she's, taking notice of it.
Well, it goes to the territory. You're 61, and, your muscles are going to maybe ache a little more. You're going to have less, less speedy recoveries, but that's one of the reasons I take ubiquinol, is that I want to... rev up the mitochondria in my brain and in my muscles.
Absolutely. Ubiquinol. She would benefit from D-ribose muscle soreness or something.
Yes,
maybe after a workout.
That's worth trying, definitely.
Christine, and see if that makes a difference.
And the dosage
for
of that is a little higher. It's about a teaspoon three times daily.
Yeah. Either
to
before
start
or after exercise or kind of all around. Okay. Thank you, Christine.
Ribose is a 5-carbon sugar that has something to do with ATP. ATP is...
our energy currency.
It's the adenosine triphosphate, which is it's a ribose-based compound.
Yeah. Very important. Muscle recovery as well as the heart. We've got a question from Doug, which actually I'm answering in the newsletter. I'm a type 2 diabetic who takes 4,000 milligrams of vitamin C each day. I recently heard that C can raise your blood sugar. Is that true?
Well, you did a little research on that. Yeah. So, what did your research find? What
we found is there are a few things that kind of started this conundrum. One of them was an older woman's study, the Iowa Health Study, where they looked at postmenopausal women who were supposedly diabetic, although they never actually verified that, to see if their blood sugars are raised. They found that a dose of 300 milligrams of vitamin C or more may promote higher blood sugar and cardiovascular disease, but there were a lot of confounders in the study, Dr. Hoffman, and I basically debunked it in the newsletter.
Yeah.
And even the authors very responsibly noted that there were limitations. It was assessed once at the beginning.
Right.
And the Iowa Health Study was not looking at vitamin C and what it does to blood sugar. They were looking at endpoints for mortality.
And that's an interesting thing is that you bring up, is that sometimes there's a study where they're looking at something.
Yeah.
Say they're looking at, the effect of a drug.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go, and by the way, what was interesting in the study is that the people who took, hypothetically, vitamin X, they had higher blood pressure. Okay, well, that study really wasn't designed to look at the, vitamin X phenomenon. And they used the data, they massaged the data, they came up with this that may reach some degree of statistical significance. But these studies are never as good as when you actually focus on the subject at hand.
That's true. And the other thing is a lot of vitamin C-containing foods, like citrus and juices, will raise blood sugar.
What's the major source of vitamin C that people get in America?
Orange juice.
Orange juice.
Yeah, yeah.
So you drink. I mean, there are people who literally have like a gallon of orange juice in the refrigerator, and it's like they glug 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 glug. I mean, especially diabetics who like they're craving sugar like crazy.
Sure.
And so.
And a glass of orange juice will do the same thing in our bodies as a glass of Coca-Cola. So all that sugar is really not tolerated well, and especially in a diabetic. So that's the other part of the problem here, is vitamin C containing foods are typically fruit.
Well, do you know what has more vitamin C than oranges?
Hmm.
Peppers.
Peppers. Red peppers.
Red peppers.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So how many people are like, grabbing a red pepper instead of a succulent orange?
Yeah. Put that in your salad.
Put it in your salad.
Stuff it with stuff.
So here's a question for you. And I really like I like those grilled red peppers.
Oh, yeah.
Does that kill the vitamin C? The roasted?
Vitamin C can be somewhat affected by heat.
Yeah.
Not as much as the B vitamins.
Because, when I have a hot grill, I like just going to get a bunch of peppers and I'll just like stick them on there.
Yeah.
And so I'll have leftovers. I don't care because they're good cut up in a salad. I like that little smoky flavor.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah. But red peppers
are good. Red peppers are great. So, Doug, take your vitamin C. I would continue taking your vitamin C because it's only going to protect your arteries and hopefully keep them elastic. It could prevent the lens in your eye from getting cataracts. It does a whole lot of good. It's a very, very important.
Prevent your gums from
bleeding. Yes. Yeah. And CoQ10, coming back to CoQ10, can prevent a lot of bleeding gum.
Indeed.
Wonderful for periodontal disease.
Yep.
Anyway, and so is vitamin C as well.
Right.
So, Doug, take your C. Take your C, absolutely.
So we have time for one additional question. We usually go for two segments of approximately 20 minutes.
We'll comment on this. Lee writes, 40 years ago, I was fortunate enough to have a new young doctor at the Ben Franklin Clinic in Philadelphia for my company physical 40 years ago. My cholesterol was 225 or so, and my HDLs were like 75. He said to me, to my surprise, you will never die of cardiovascular disease. About 10 years ago, I had an EBT heart scan, just in case, and it came back zero.
Wow. Okay.
Ha,
you go. Ha. And that's it, right?
And that's it.
That's the sum total of the comment.
Yeah.
So let us comment on that.
He had a beautiful HDL at 75.
Right.
So the total number is not that significant when there's good protection.
Exactly.
Yeah.
However, this is a really good case for doing an EBT heart scan because, while a high HDL is pretty good insurance against heart disease, I have found this not the sole determinant. I've been surprised sometimes where people with fairly decent HDLs, for other reasons, have come up with some degree of calcification and cardiac risk.
Mm-hmm. I'd also look at triglycerides.
Certainly that. I mean, look at the whole picture. Look
all
at
by
ApoA and B. Look at the LDL fractionation, whether it's large particles or small particles.
Yeah.
Look at homocysteine. Look at oxidized LDL. Look at Lp(a), which is a partial risk factor, and on it goes. Looking at omega-3 ratios, 3-to-6 ratios. Looking at the person's insulin, doing a glucose tolerance test. These are all part of the picture. And, questioning a patient, did you smoke? Did you You know, what are you eating?
Yeah.
Are you, you know, is the patient's body composition normal mm-hmm. or optimal?
Are they physically active?
Are they physically active? Are yeah. they under enormous stress? Do they get adequate sleep? Do they have
yeah.
sleep apnea?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could sleep apnea could steal away some of the benefits of a hereditary good HDL. You know, so good for him. I'm glad that he confirmed that. And
yeah.
he's thumbing his nose at the medical establishment. Every time he sees a Lipitor commercial on TV, he goes, ha ha. Right?
Good for you, Lee.
Yeah. Stick to your guns, Lee.
Yeah. Okay.
Great. Okay, so in that spirit, let us conclude. And a reminder to our listeners, we've got a great seminar coming up at the Hoffman Center. If you so choose to attend, it's on June 24th at 6:30 p.m. You have to call the Hoffman Center, 212-779-1744 for reservations. Or if you prefer, and we want you there, and by the way, it's free to Hoffman Center patients, many of whom are listeners to this podcast.
Yes.
If you prefer, you can also view it. You know, there's going to be a small viewing fee for the seminar to cover our recording costs. After the event,
mm-hmm.
so that nobody will have an excuse not to get this valuable information. So details at drhoffman.com. Check it out. Thanks for joining us today, Layla.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.